Hi, this is Robert Kiyosaki, and you're listening to Capital Hacking. This is the most important thing you can listen to today.
On today's episode of Capital Hacking.
It's an education for freedom, that word freedom.
Yeah.
What do you mean by freedom, right? Because that means a lot of different things today. It can either mean, right, a freedom of indifference, which basically means you have the freedom to choose you to be you, right? And that's not necessarily the freedom that classical education is focused on. It's more focused on the terminology of freedom for excellence, right? And what does that mean, right? In a very short, succinct way, it means the disciplining of desire to make the good at first possible and then effortless, right? The disciplining of desire to make the good possible and then effortless.
I have a dream.
With great power comes great responsibility.
I can do this all day.
Shit, don't get scared now.
They may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom.
Cinderella story out of nowhere.
It's in the hole.
That the only thing we have to fear is.
Welcome back to Capital Hacking. It is great to have you here. Thanks for joining the Audio Mastermind. My name is Josh McCallum. We are joined today by Mark Kalpagian from California. This guy does some stuff that most of us will never do. Very proud of what he's achieved over the last 20 plus years. Works at the highest level in the charter school universe, right? This universe that's somewhere between public schools and private things. And what I'm excited to share with you is that he has taken so much of what he learned here in Capital Hacking, plus his own human development, and applied it to another industry. And love that. Thanks for the applications out there, Mark. And thank you for showing the world what's possible as we open our mind through these audio masterminds. There's so much more we can do together than we can do living in our old previous mindsets. So again, this is going to be an eye opener. And we're going to begin by talking about the actual work that Mark does and then go into his investing philosophy and what he did to change this company that he works with for the better forever. Thanks, Mark. Can't wait to share the story of classical education with you and with everyone. We love this episode. Here's Mark Kalpagian. Mr. Mark Kalpagian, welcome to the big show. Glad to have you here.
Good morning, Josh McCallum and audience.
All right. Well, you know, we promise all the time on this show that we're entering into an audio mastermind, something where we're going to develop new ways of thinking because of the people we meet and get to talk to and learn from. This is probably the paramount show for that, folks. So we had to go to the West Coast, grab Mark Kalpagian, and ask him to be on the big show. So I know you've been listening for a while. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, I've started in the early days and have really enjoyed the show, all the different kinds of speakers, different investment topics, and just this whole idea of human capital. How do you really leverage that to make great impact in the world?
Yep. And that's why we wanted to ask you to be on here, because I want you to bend the minds of all of us listening today. So we have some great backstories you and I'll share in a moment. But before we do, why don't we find out who Mark is? Where are you putting your human capital to work, family and work? And where do you live?
Beautiful. So I currently reside in North San Diego County, and I'm the chief operating officer for a group of public tuition-free independent study charter schools called the Classical Academies. Seven locations, about 5,300 students. And that's my day job. I have a family of six children with number seven on the way.
Woo.
So that's a lot of fun as well. In terms of your audience, they might be interested in a little bit about my background. I started out in management consulting for, you know, the big corporate world, Accenture and the Nielsen companies. So started there, and then through a series of perhaps coincidences, I got back into the education world and spent about the last 20 years in the university and then also the K-12 world.
Wow.
In my current role, I've done about $100 million in bond financing to purchase facilities and remodel them. So that could be of interest to your audience. I have a small rental that I manage on the side. And I've been chairman for over 4 years of, it's called the Economic Development Corporation here in North San Diego County. So I have some economic development background as well.
Woo. Okay. So if this was a call-in number, I would be taking questions from all those categories of cool stuff. Sadly, it is not. We have not figured out how to do that just yet. We could probably do a Zoom live or something fun, but in the future, Mark, but we have to give the audience another fun little tidbit. We both went to a great school together. Mm-hmm. We crisscrossed paths a little bit working there, I think. So we both went to Franciscan University of Steubenville, really great place out in Ohio, but we never ran into each other there. I think we crossed paths in Europe.
That's
and
right.
I'm very, very proud to say we both had a killer opportunity to work in the housing portion of a university campus in the Alps in Austria. Literally, we're in a very rare breed of colleagues that can say that. I mean, that is a special little experience we both got to have out there.
That was a fantastic opportunity, especially to be able to learn about different cultures and to travel. And that's another great way to expose and advance your human capital.
Totally. Yeah, we lived. So Mark and I have this cool thing where for Melanie and I, Mark, did you spend 4 years there? Did you guys spend 4 years there?
A little over 5 years.
Oh my gosh, much longer than me. So 4 years was my contract and we got to live in this village in Europe, which I'd say impacted a lot of the things Melanie and I do now with land development and hospitality. But picture this, folks. Okay, I know you're driving in a Tesla. Very fancy people. Now, maybe you're not. I don't drive a Tesla. But you can picture a village where you can walk everywhere. Convenience stores, little restaurants, the bar, churches. You can go to work on your feet. No car, no automobile. And there's a babbling brook running by your house. And the Alps are behind your house. And Maria von Trapp is singing music every single morning. It's amazing. It was so idyllic, Mark.
It was incredible.
Head, doesn't it? It was so good.
It does.
It does. So that is the community. I imagine you see it in the properties we build that they have some similarities, especially right now. I wish you would get out here, but you're on the West Coast, so we can't drive you down here. That's too far for a drive. But let's get into terminology you threw out at the beginning that most of us listeners have not yet heard of, and that's called classical education. And you and I are going to get to this, but why would you argue that financial freedom and personal freedom and freedom is a core outcome of classical education? I think you connected the two dots before we got on the air, and I wanted you to do that on the air.
Sure. So if you actually look at the etymology of the word education, right, it means to be pulled out of, to be drawn out of, right? And what are they drawing you out of and what are they drawing you into, right? So education from the classical standpoint is you're being drawn out of small-mindedness. You're being drawn out of maybe personal bias. You're being drawn out of shadows and into truth. It's an education for freedom, that word freedom.
Yeah.
What do you mean by freedom, right? Because that means a lot of different things today. It can either mean, right, a freedom of indifference, which basically means you have the freedom to choose you to be you, right? And that's not necessarily the freedom that classical education is focused on. It's more focused on the terminology of freedom for excellence, right? Mm-hmm. And what does that mean, right? In a very short, succinct way, it means the disciplining of desire to make the good at first possible and then effortless. Right? The disciplining of desire to make the good possible and then effortless. Like you become so good at it, like lifting weights that, you know, at first lifting maybe a 20-pound weight is hard. And then after you do it for, you know, a couple months, it's much easier. It's building this capacity for virtue. So classical education is meant to build the foundation for human flourishing, to be fully alive.
Wow.
Right? So it uses terms like wisdom, virtue, friendship, joy.
Dude, drop the mic. Now you understand why we're doing this audio mastermind, because there is something good in this world, folks. And we love investing in people. This is a very important public service announcement, Mark. But recently I went on LinkedIn and changed my profile name to, I wrote, you know, that little tagline underneath. It says investing in real people and real assets. That's like kind of the work we do, is finding good people and finding good assets. And I wrote, I know that's a very unimportant public service announcement, but I draw my attention to the fact that this is why we have to have these conversations, folks, is what are we all striving for? You know, I mean, I think we want to build ourselves and build up our virtue and hopefully build up our family. By the way, this guy has 6 kids, almost 7 on the way. 7th is on the way, which means you're either wise in the eyes of the people listening or you're not wise. And that's in their eyes of their beholder. But I argue that my philosophy training was the 1980s after school TV movies. Okay. And I learned everything I know from watching a lot of TV. And every movie in the 80s was about dad who worked all the time and lost his family. Yeah. And then dad remembers he needs a family and he loves his family. And that's more important than anything else in life. So since my philosophical training on ABC after school movies taught me that children are a virtue, a gift and a blessing, I would say you're very well blessed, Mr. Kalpagian. No, I'm serious. Like, we go to these masterminds in a big event and they talk about putting their children and family first, which is totally awesome. You know, and that's been a gift I've gotten from GoBundance and other masterminds, is this idea of let's put our children first. Let's make sure we're investing in them. And in that scenario, you're a billionaire of babies, right? Because you're 7.
I've never heard it put that way before, but
yeah, you got so many babies. You're like a billionaire. Anyway, no, it's great to have a big family. By the way, isn't having a bigger family a test of virtue and a struggle?
It absolutely is. But it also brings great joy.
It does. It does. And were you from a big family, Mark?
I call it mid-size. I was the middle of 5.
That's big. So, yeah. So I had one brother. So, you know, we're both into this, you know, bigger family stuff now. But let's get into the reason we wanted to get you on the show here. Not only do we want to talk about freedom, and we understand now that there's a different definition of freedom. You talked the main Seems like there's 2 categories of freedom you've talked about. One is, the first one you defined was, how did you define it again?
Freedom of indifference.
Of indifference.
Freedom is basically equivalent to choice, you know, and choice is the ultimate end goal, right? It's not what you choose, it's just having the ability to choose.
Which, in and of itself, I want people to be able to choose. You're just saying that that can't be the end in of itself. They can be, but that's called freedom of indifference. I've never heard that before, but very interesting. And the other one is freedom for excellence, meaning trying to strive for something.
That's right. That your freedom is directed towards a greater good than just this ability to choose, right? You actually can choose a good thing. And so if you take a music metaphor, right, like somebody to play the piano, right? Anybody can choose to play the piano. You can sit down and bang on the keys, but are you truly free, right? Or do you have to actually discipline yourself to learn harmony and notes and rhythm and beat? And then after that discipline and training, then are you truly free, right, to play the piano? That's kind of the analogy around the freedom for excellence, is there's a disciplining of desire so that it makes the good possible and then effortless after that.
Makes me want to go to school with you. The other thing that crosses my mind is that there is going to be struggle for any achievement. And that's part, it's like baked into this idea for excellence. And it doesn't mean you ever become the perfection of excellence. It implies a pursuit. As a matter of fact, have you heard of this guy, Ryan Holiday, the author from The Obstacle is the Way?
It sounds familiar, but I can't pull it out of the hat.
He's a relatively younger dude, maybe not even 40 yet. And he writes these really awesome philosophy books. Wow. And they're pop culture. Like everybody, a lot of people have read them. They're not like just 10 people. It's like thousands and thousands, maybe millions of people have gotten his books. But his book, The Obstacle is the Way, is Stoic philosophy and the idea of why Marcus Aurelius and all those old-time Roman philosophers believed that struggle was vital. The struggle was vital to achieve the goal. As a matter of fact, they said the obstacle is the way to the goal. Anyway, so I imagine these are probably not easy schools you work in. So before we dive more into classical education, I want to bounce back out and talk about you and the world of real financial capital formation. So Tell us the story about you getting to a wonderful organization called the Classical Academies, and you discovered this issue about renting. Talk about what you discovered and why you made some suggestions for a strategic maneuver.
Right. We had done a long term, maybe 20-year strategic plan about some big goals that we wanted to achieve. And so that was our first step. And then a few years later, we said, all right, let's take it down a step and let's look at a 5-year financial plan. What are the real goals? Where do we want to accomplish? What do we want to achieve? And it became evident looking at finances and growth and income that with all of our rental properties, you know, every year those would go up 3 to 5%. And then at the end of the lease, they would recalibrate to market rate so that at points like that could go up 20-30%. And it just became really unstable in terms of long-term financial modeling. So I suggested, why don't we look to switch the strategy from renting to purchasing our properties and then be able to invest in those properties, create greater value, and build equity at the same time. So it's like a lot of your listeners invest for themselves. It was like investing on behalf of the taxpayer, right? Mm-hmm. How do we use the taxpayer money to create even more value and more wealth?
Which is a mind-bending idea to even talk about tax fraud. So that's where we have to ask a couple broader questions. Many of us listening today don't normally understand or get involved in, I don't usually get involved in conversations about charter schools and about the way they work and how they're run and who runs them. What is the universe you live in? And then talk to me about how you were able to do bond financing. Like, is it because you were part of a government program? Or let's start from the top. A charter school means what, and where do you live on that ecosystem in your company?
All right. Yeah, so at the most fundamental level, a charter school has a charter, almost like a medieval term, right? Where a charter is like an authorizing governance document that outlines what you're going to do and how you're going to accomplish it, right? So this charter document is kind of like your articles of incorporation, if you will, or your raison d'etre, your reason for being and how you're going to get there. And then you take that charter and you have to be approved by an authorizing agency, which is usually another school district or a county office of education, and in some rare circumstances, a state board of education. So then that legal entity approves your charter, and that then you can legally exist. And then as a public entity, you then record your enrollment and receive a state apportionment of funding for your students in your care. What's very interesting, maybe to your audience, is here in California, there are two ways of funding public students, right? So the traditional school model is you get paid or funded based on the amount of students and how many days they actually come to school in a seat, right? So if you have 100 students and they're there 80% of the time, you use that formula and you get your funding apportionment. Okay. The model that we're under is the independent study model, and it doesn't relate back to students in a seat in a school. Instead, it relates back to the amount of work that's accomplished under the supervision of a credentialed teacher. So if students aren't learning, then we're not getting paid.
Wow.
So
wow,
we have to show evidence of learning to get paid, not just having students in your care or in a seat.
Hi, this is Melanie McCallum. Josh and I are just so grateful for the many investors who already joined us at Accountable Equity. Accountable Equity is so much more than a capital group. It's really a community of accredited investors that want to learn and grow together. I just want to personally invite you, if you want to find out more about this type of investment and see if it's right for you and your family, please visit us at accountableequity.com.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Melanie McCallan. Josh and I are just so grateful for the many investors who have already joined us at Accountable Equity. Accountable Equity is so much more than a capital group. It's really a community of accredited investors that want to learn and grow together. I just want to personally invite you, if you want to find out more about this type of investment and see if it's right for you and your family, please visit us at accountableequity.com. You can fill out the contact form. We'll get right back to you and see if this is a great fit for you and your family. We'd love to meet you. We look forward to learning about you. Please visit us at accountableequity.com.
Hey, it's Hal Elrod, author of The Miracle Morning, and you're listening to Capital Hacking. Enjoy.
Okay, so obviously some of us are picking up on the fact that that sounds very productive. It sounds very much more like a benefit-based and outcome-based. You're working hard to achieve for your student, which is compelling. Now, you and I've talked, I mean, it's 5,300 students under your care through this 7-location business that you're running. So it's like you're running a very substantial company. How many teammates do you have? How much staff do you have in that 5,300 student base?
You know, it ebbs and flows, but around 600.
Yeah. So you're a COO of a pretty sizable company there. And so the financial choices that you and the team make are sizable. That's why when you went out to buy real estate, and that's the crux of the story here today. So you went out to buy real estate, and I want to understand what that must have been like for you, because I listened to your story and I think, wow, there's some parallels to what we do in the private sector. And you're kind of public-private, right? The charter was created by a small group of people.
Right.
And is that group like a management company of the charter itself, or how's that business structure work?
There are different models. Some run through a charter management called a CMO, Charter Management Organization. We run a little bit different model where it's a board of directors that runs it, a non-publicly elected board.
Okay. Right?
So they're not running for school board in your November elections.
Okay.
And then that board kind of manages, hires the CEO, and then that CEO, you know, runs the company. But it's under, that authorization is under a publicly elected agency.
Gotcha. And that allowed you to say, let's move from rent to ownership, which sounds like an excellent choice. So tell us what that path was like, and what did you build ground up buildings? What did you do to get from here to there?
Well, we had several different models. There were some facilities that we were renting where the landlord didn't necessarily want to sell to us. And so that was a period of about a year, negotiations back and forth about trying to make the case of why we needed to buy the buildings. Because if we didn't, we might not be able to afford rent 10 years down the road.
Right.
So there was negotiations, and then, you know, you do like what you do in your world, you get appraisals, you find a meeting ground, and then you have to go raise the money, right? Because you don't have $10, $20 million sitting in the bank. You have to find a way to raise that capital. So what we would do is, you know, just like in a personal credit score, right? The school kind of has a credit rating. So we go to S&P and we go through their whole rating process where they look at financials, governance, leadership, test scores, the whole shebang.
Oh, wow.
And then you go out to sale. You get an underwriter, you know, that take your bonds to market. You do an investor presentation. People like, you know, American Funds and Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan, and they like the opportunity because there's tax advantages to public municipal bonds in California. And, you know, with our 20-year history, we're a pretty good bet versus a new school that's just coming on the market. And
that's a great point.
You know, institutional investors want to balance their riskier portfolios with bonds that give a consistent return of 3 to 5, 6% over the long term. And yeah. So it becomes this win-win where we can raise the capital to buy the school, to remodel it, reimagine it, and then the investors win with some consistent returns.
That's very impressive. So, you know, for us in the world of private investing with retail investors who get to directly invest in what we do, this world of institutional investing is not maybe on our horizon. So if we could go back a step, let me see if I understood what you said. So it's curious, because sometimes people listen to this show who do what we do. So it sounds like after you find a price with the buyer, seller, okay, so now you have a price. We need $100 million to finish our business plan. And were you able to buy all 7 assets, 7 properties? Or are you still renting?
We had already owned two of them, two gotcha. And a half, I could say. So I bought a piece of another and pulled it on. But we owned two and a half and we bought the rest.
Okay, so you had to buy the rest. You had to do some renovations, you also said. So when you say you hire an underwriter and that is connected to Goldman Sachs or to these other groups, I imagine it's, is there an investment bank relationship first, or does this underwriter float around independently?
The underwriter is basically in charge of marketing your bonds to all those investors.
Gotcha.
So step one is to find an underwriter and then negotiate their fee. So a lot of people don't realize that, you know, they just bring on an underwriter and the underwriter's fee is very, it can be very high or, you know, not as slim as you'd like. So what we did is I hired a firm to audit all the underwriter fees. And then I basically said, well, I want the lowest fee. And we were able to get that in our bond offering.
That's pretty awesome. That's pretty awesome. So I heard two teams there. So you were out shopping these underwriters. Is that actually what the company type of industry is called? Bond underwriters? What would that industry be called?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, your underwriter is your, okay. you know, that sells the bonds and they sell kind of assets institutionally around the nation.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's for those of us listening today on this show, it's interesting because now we're shifting into trying to create parallels to what you and I and so many other people do directly. Either, you know, people, a lot of people listening to the show are looking for passive investing and they want to see what type of humans they need to be around and what kind of thought process they need to be around to even know you can buy into real estate passively. And then there's those people that buy active deals. And so they go out and find a building and rent it out themselves. But trying to create a parallel here. So you guys knew what you wanted to do. Then you find this underwriting organization. And this underwriting organization is meant to take you to market. So they're an intermediary that's going to make your filing sellable or sold. Then you hired a CPA group to audit the pricing, because I'm sure they do all kinds of different models, right? We'll take this much up front, 1%, 10%. Right. And on the back end, we'll take this much. And in the middle, we'll take this much. And because they're not apples to apples, the only way to understand it would be another third party explaining what the value proposition is to you, it sounds like.
Yeah, and you really do that first before you bring them on, is you do the audit, then you negotiate the fee, and then you onboard the underwriter.
So cool. And then from there, how long does it take? So if you've got it all done, it's now a book, a pretty presentation.
3 to 4 months to consummate the deal.
Then it's done. How long did it take for the bonds to be sold? And did you want all the money up front, or did you want it to come in pieces and tranches?
Once you go to market, they sell within a matter of hours.
Come on.
Yeah, no, because the underwriter, that's part of their role, is that they work their leads, you know, and they kind of do their pre-marketing. We do an investor presentation. And then once it goes to market, you know, I think our last bond, we had 7 times the amount of orders than the bonds that we were offering.
Well, there you go, folks. That's another big difference between raising money the Main Street way and the Wall Street way. That's impressive. I'm glad it worked out for a good group like you. Boy, that sounds like an insider's game, though, doesn't it, folks? I mean, in a way, that's great for Mark and the Classical Academies. But I appreciate the way, think of the contrast, Mark, because for us, our investors probably have either met us or met us through the internet and then researched us. And then they come visit with us at Learn and Grows.
Right.
We love it. We call it investor hospitality. It's like, man, we want you to realize we're the people standing in the gap, making sure that your money gets put into that building and that building makes money back to you. So it's very direct. I imagine the investor institutions that bought your bonds probably have almost no knowledge of you as a wonderful person. So they don't know how good of a team they got. And you guys, thankfully, they got a great team.
Well, it's actually very interesting, Josh, because I've actually had an individual investor phone calls that they'll randomly call
awesome.
The website and basically want a double check before they actually invest.
At what level? Like, are we talking like a $10 million investor, or are we talking about $100,000? What's that look like, that phone call?
7-figure investors.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah,
that's
they'll
great.
Call
money
or
managers.
Occasionally have done a site visit.
That's
walk
good.
Around.
That's actually great.
Yeah.
So I get it. First of all, I just want to recap some of the cool stuff. You know, for one, I wanted to get you on because I appreciate you listening to this show for so long. And we appreciate that you're doing it in a different way. You're putting a lot of the same practices that we do into the marketplace. And I think you're doing it for this good. You and I talked a little bit about one of the distinguishing factors of your education, and it related to the parents. And I want to end on that thought and just let you share with the world what you want to say about the things you do and what you do with that relates to capital hacking, perhaps. And then if we can follow up with you in any way. So what was it that, if you can go back to what we were talking about off air about the role of parents?
Right. As an independent study charter school that was founded on this principle of every student needs something unique to thrive, right? To be fully alive, to find their fullest sense of freedom. We started with this knowledge that parents are the primary educators of their children, and they're a critical component of the success formula. So that was step number one. In a traditional school, often parents drop their kids off and they leave everything to the teachers or the school. But in our model, it's this partnership that is built on trust, collaboration, and accountability from both sides that invests in students' formation. And so it really comes down to how do you personalize the education for each child so that they can thrive, so they can think, they can communicate, and they can achieve.
Yep. I remember you talked a lot about thinking before we got on the air. You know, the best way for someone to be free is for them to have the ability to evaluate other things and for them to feel whole, that they're not having to follow the trends, you know, and being able to evaluate trends. Some trends are awesome and other trends maybe have no value. So you don't have to follow both. You can just choose the one that's of great value to you in your life. And I appreciate what you're doing. I wish you were not out in California. I wish you were closer to the East Coast with us, but we appreciate you being on the show. Any last words, or would you like us to be able to reach out to you or follow what you do?
For your community that is so invested in human capital formation, if you're interested in following us and supporting us financially in any way, or just, you know, interested more in our philosophy of education, we are at classicalacademy.com, classicalacademy.com. And for me, I just get so excited to go to work every day knowing that the work that we're doing is all about human capital for our youth, helping them so that they can rise up into a lot of the things that you talk about and discuss, this freedom piece. And so if you want to invest maybe in, you know, one of the areas that give the greatest return, right, in human capital, education is one of those areas. classicalacademy.com. Follow us. We're on LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter. Thanks for listening in, and it's a privilege to be a part of the show.
And, you know, for Mark, phenomenal calls to action, because I remember when we were doing the show, we were friendly, and I just said, why don't you get on the show? I'd love to share a different way that education's happening in the world, because not everybody knows this is even happening. And then we brainstormed a little about, oh, well, we could talk about this bond raise. I'm like, yeah, that's all really amazing stuff. But at the end of the day, I appreciate your main mission is to share the joy for what you have in classical education and what it does for people. I always say the dignity of the person, maybe that's what we're focusing on. So thank you for what you're doing, Mark.
And Josh, you know, this idea of investing, if we weren't able to raise those money for those bonds and put back in for the students, we wouldn't have the facilities to educate these kids. So it literally, that financial freedom really gave us the freedom to do education the way that we saw fit. And so it's this virtuous cycle all about human capital, and just so privileged and blessed to be a part of it.
Thank you, Mark. We'll follow up again. Thanks for all you do.
Bye now.